All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Off-Season Week 4 edition. I am Bobby Fenton coming to you from my kitchen in Tampa, which just so happens to be the home of your Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're going to keep saying that for quite a while. Not going to plan on just glossing over the whole Super Bowl thing after a few weeks, because we do, after all, have the Super Bowl champions as our team. And as our podcast has been dealing with for years and years and years now, it's not just all about the championships. Even when you win one, you're always looking ahead to the next thing. We've got lots to be excited about. Still waiting on free agency to kick into gear, although we now are in the month of March, so we're starting to get closer. And same thing with the draft and all these things. And we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit of, not necessarily new developments today. There haven't been very many new developments, but some things that we've heard that have been out there and just possibilities as we start to get closer and closer to, I guess you could say, a denouement of, you know, really finding out, like, who are the people that are going to stay with the Bucs, who are the people that are going to be moving on, if any, and on and on and on. So thank you for joining us. The Free Stretch, like it always is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. They're a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Huge showroom, huge lot, great website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Either way you want to do it, you can take a look at the inventory. You can test drive anything you want. If you go to the lot, of course, that's easy. If you do it at home, they'll bring it to you just to test drive, not even the one you're buying. They'll deliver cars to you just to take a look at if you want to. And no matter what you do, like we always tell you, nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty. I mean, car issues are the single, like, war. I hate car issues. Nobody likes car issues. But when you buy from Bill Curry Ford, you have the peace of mind that if something goes wrong with that car, with the engine or something like that, you're covered under the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty. As long as you own the car that you bought from Bill Curry Ford, that applies. So check them out. They're also doing a great thing. Every month they're doing something to help out those less fortunate. This week, it's a food pantry thing, so you can bring in items to the showroom. And you can do that whether you're buying a car or not, even if you're just looking and donate. And you can get more information there at the website, BillCurryFord.com, or go see them a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, just past Hillsborough there, where they've been serving the Tampa Bay area for 60 years now. The first family of automotive dealership in this area. So thanks to them. And I was looking, and actually I was listening too, because I always listen to the Ira Kaufman podcast we have here, along with the Joes, and just reading things about free agency. Like I said, there's not going to be week-to-week movement yet. We're getting closer to it, but there's nothing different today than when I recorded last week's show, last Thursday or Friday or whenever it was. However, just reading some things, and I was actually listening to the Sage and to the Joes, and I was browsing Greg Allman's Twitter feed. He's the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic. And it was interesting because it got me thinking. Allman was talking about, and they had a little thread here about how the Bucs have been so good in recent years, not just in acquiring really good players and making a lot of good calls in that department, both in the draft and free agency, which we know they did, but they've been really good at knowing when to move on. And those decisions to move on after things have played out over subsequent seasons, or this past season too, those decisions didn't look any worse. In fact, they looked pretty good. He listed some of the guys that the Bucs moved on from, because, yeah, it was great when they went out and got Jason Pierre-Paul. It was great when they went out and got, you know, Antonio Brown. It was great when they went out and got Leonard Fournette. And those guys all helped, you know, Rob Gronkowski, needless to say, Tom Brady. That was all great. But what did they also do? Okay, guys they let go of. Adam Humphries, if you saw, just got released by the Titans earlier this week. And I love Adam Humphries. I'm not listing these names to, like, rip these guys. I'm just saying, guys the Bucs had a decision to make on and pay big money to or move on from, the ones they moved on from, it looks really good now. I mean, like, Humphries is a free agent again. Brashad Perriman had 3 touchdowns for the Jets in 2020 after having 6 with the Bucs in 2019. Carl Nassib was another one listed there. Nassib, who I liked. He was really good with the Bucs. 12 and a half sacks in 2 years with the Bucs. Then went to the Raiders last year, came off the bench, only had 2.5 sacks. Hargraves, we've talked about before. It's very difficult to part with a first-round pick like that. The Bucs did it. Then they did say, okay, we're keeping, you know, guys like Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet, who they re-signed. So it's not just the numbers and the names of the guys you went out and got. It's the ones that you, you know, showed some restraint on. And that's not easy. And depending on how you got the guy or what the guy did for you before, it's definitely not easy. And it got me to thinking about it because, you know, I was reading another report, and this was discussed on Ira's podcast, which you should definitely listen to. Always there on JoeBucksFan.com, just like mine is. And they were talking about Lavonte David because there was a report out there. And when I say report, this is nothing concrete. This is nothing from anything certain. This is sources. And this is people talking and saying things, not anything that has actually happened. See, there's actual news, and then there's things that people say, and they're different. And they're both worthy of being reported on sometimes. But just to, you know, make sure we separate the two in our minds, what we're talking about here. Mary Kay Cabot is a writer. She covers the Cleveland Browns. She's got credentials, been around a long time, and she is somebody who I think has a Hall of Fame vote. And she was reporting that the Browns are kicking the tires on Lavonte David. She cited league sources, is the quote. Mike Garofalo of NFL Network said on Wednesday, I'm recording this on Thursday, so this is yesterday. Here's what he said, and this is just what he said, okay? It's not anything concrete. Quote, Lavonte David, the linebacker, I mean, at some point you're getting to a point where you just don't have enough money for everybody, so I think there is the general sense that Lavonte David is going to be headed elsewhere. I know the Browns have been mentioned by Mary Kay Cabot, which we just mentioned too, who has covered that team for quite some time. They will have company, though. There are a lot of teams out there looking to upgrade their defense who have a lot of money to spend here, so I would think Lavonte David is going to wind up being elsewhere in 2021. So he sounds rather sure of himself, and I don't know what he's basing that on other than him just saying it. But it did get me to thinking, combined with reading the Twitter thread of Greg Allman talking about how the Bucs have made good decisions not jumping on people they could have kept, and hearing all the other things that people have been talking about. And I love Lavonte David. I mean, I really, really, truly would be disappointed if he left the team. Because, I mean, and he's a good player. He's not as good in 2000 or in 2020. He was still making plays for the Bucs. It's not like he's washed up or something. I mean, he's a good player, and there's a reason other teams will want to sign him. So he is an asset. He's not. It's not like, oh, well, who cares? We don't. But he is 31. And, I mean, if I was the Bucs, I would love to sign Lavonte David for like a year, maybe two. But Lavonte David, if he has options that are multi-year, and I mean, obviously with NFL contracts, they're not guaranteed anyway, so it's really just more about guaranteed money than it is term. But if he's got bigger offers, you know, spread out over more years or whatever it is, and he can get a bigger total number, I guess it really just comes down to the total number. I'm not sure if I'm the Bucs if I'd be going nuts to match that as much as I love him. Because again, at 31, and I mean, you never want to, and this is, I always talk about the Rays, and I know people, mostly based on the stadium thing, not having to do anything with the organization itself, but also having to do with the way the Rays part with familiar players sometimes, and Blake Snell's the most recent example of this. I know people like to rip the Rays, but the results speak for themselves, and the Rays to compete with, and in many cases, out-compete, like they did this past year, teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and all these other teams, and be right up there with the, you know, you look at the top five teams in Major League Baseball with their winning percentages over a period of a long time, not just a flash in the pan, but over, you know, the past decade or more, and the Rays are right up there. They're amazing how they run their organization, and some people use different adjectives for it, but I don't understand. I mean, I get the whole thing with Stu Sternberg with the stadium thing, 100%. I totally understand that. You know, there's a lot of people who don't like him. There's a lot of people who, you know, have a negative response when you bring up his name. But as far as the administrative and organizational staff he has hired and what they have done with the team, the Rays are one of the most amazing organizations in sports. You're a fool if you don't recognize that. And what is one of the things they're good at? They get guys, and I know their situation and the Bucs situations are different. Major League Baseball is different from the NFL. I'm not comparing apples to apples, but follow me on this because the basic premise of the Lavonte David part of this is apples to apples. The Rays are really good. They're really good at getting guys when their value is lower league-wide, but getting high-value production out of them. And then when that flips and all of a sudden their value around the league financially is high, but yet their on-field value doesn't necessarily match that, they move on. They get the best out of guys when they're in their 20s, young, and those guys often have their best years as Rays, and all of a sudden they're commodities and they go play for other teams for much bigger money, which they earned with that performance with the Rays. Only the performance those new teams get for the money they're paying isn't that good. And the Rays always know when to move on. It might be a little too early sometimes. Sometimes you're like, wait, he's good. Why are we getting rid of him? Now, he was good. He's not going to be as good now that the Rays have moved on from him. The Rays knew exactly when to cut bait. And that's the same thing here with Levante. Levante David is one person. But I'm saying with a lot of these free agents, and his is the most glaring, you're not signing, or I'm not signing a linebacker at age 31 to a big multi-year deal. And I love, capital L, I love Levante Davis. And if he may not want to do it either. He may want to say, hey, I'll take that 1 or 2 year deal. I'm going to play for the Bucks some more. And if he does, let's ride. Because he can still play, okay? But I wouldn't go nuts if some other team says, yeah, we're going to go nuts. We'll go nuts. I'd be like, okay, you guys go nuts then. Because we're not going to do that. And it would kill me. And I do think the Bucks, by the way, and John Ledyard, on Twitter, if you follow him, he's a good one. He drew up a way, who knows how possible these things are. But there are ways the Bucks can, if they get creative with restructuring. And we talked about this last week, contract extensions. They do have actually a lot of cap space. They just have a lot of free agents too, is the thing. But they have a lot of cap space, not just in 2021, but in 22 and 23 as well. If they really, really, really wanted to do it, they might be able to pull off keeping every one of these guys. Like I said, the big eight or the big seven maybe is better, because I don't think Leonard Fournette's coming back either way. So if they do that and they want to do that, that's cool, but they may not want to do that. They may not feel the need to do that. And, it is a business. Players do come and go, and emotionally it would suck. I mean, I remember them moving on from Derrick Brooks. I remember them moving on from John Lynch, being shocked at the time, and all these other people. And Levante David, again, is a guy who I love and can play for my favorite football team forever, as far as I'm concerned. But the Bucks don't have to do that. And at age 31, if somebody else does try and do that with Levante David, then congrats to both parties. Congrats to Levante David for getting that kind of money, and congrats to that team for getting that kind of player. But, I don't know. The Rays way is a good way to do things. And you can do things the Rays way even when you have money. You don't have to do it just to be cheap. It's effective. There's no reason to make these leaps when you have other options. And I think the Bucks have some leverage here. I don't mean that Levante David doesn't have leverage, because he's got leverage with other teams wanting him. But I just mean the Bucks don't have to match. Like, they don't have to make a desperation match on that one. And so we'll see. Again, nothing has happened. I'm just talking about things that people have said, but it's worth reporting when you hear things that may, portend other things as we approach free agency. But other than that, all's quiet on the free agency front. The combine would have come and gone by now. Although I am enjoying, this is the time of year with Twitter, if you're on there, and you can follow me on Twitter at Bobby Game Day, by the way. And email me anytime, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. But this is the time of year on Twitter when you get a lot of the vertical jump videos. Box jumps are a big one. I'm enjoying those. I'm a gym guy. Like, I like working out. I like learning stuff about how athletes train. I have a garage gym. I'm a wannabe meathead. I'm not there. But I love watching this stuff. So, you get the guys on their, you get cell phone videos of, I think, what was it? Was it Miles Garrett or somebody the other day, like doing like a 64-inch box jump weighing 250 pounds plus or whatever it is? I eat stuff like that up with a spoon. I can't get enough of it. So there's that. Oh, Leonard Fournette, anybody on Bucks Twitter probably saw Leonard Fournette deadlifting. Looked like mid-fours. It depends on the weight of the bar. He was using a hex bar. Sometimes those don't always weigh the same. But he was somewhere in the mid-fours just pumping out deadlifts. I went, after I saw that clip, scurried over into my little garage gym, pumped out some sets myself. They were not in the mid-400s. Although I think I could get a single at what Fournette looked like he was warming up with the other day. in his deadlift form. But if you go on, Rick Stroud had it on his Twitter. It was in a few other places. If you follow Bucks people on Twitter, you probably saw it. And that's where we're at right now. You know, we didn't get the combine. We didn't get the underwear Olympics. We didn't get the vertical jumps and the 40s and all those things. And it looks like we're not even going to get much of anything else until, I mean, there'll be pro days. Those aren't usually televised, but you get some clips sometimes on NFL Network or things like that. Speaking of the NFL, there is one thing I wanted to bring up today because this is also the time of year, not just for workout-related things and things like that. It's also the time of year for rules change proposals. And they're talking about a few of these rules changes like they do every year. Teams can propose any rules they want. They have to get 75% support. So with 32 teams, 24 teams have to vote yes on them. And if they do that, they become new rules. So one of the things that's being looked at right now is overtime. It seems like overtime is always being looked at. But overtime is being looked at again. And, you know, over the years it's changed. It used to be just sudden death and a 15-minute overtime period, first team to score one. If you won the coin toss and you got a decent kickoff return out to the 35 or 40, hit a couple first downs, you could bomb a 50-yard field goal and win the game like that. And it felt cheap. Although it didn't always happen that way. And sudden death did have the advantage of being simple and easy to understand and straight up. So they changed it a little bit so that, yeah, okay, well, now you can do that field goal thing, but the other team still gets a chance. Just for field goals, though. For touchdowns, it's still sudden death. So they did that, and that's the current system. And then they shorten overtime from 15 minutes to 10, which I didn't like at all because I don't like ties at all. And especially if you're going to give both teams the ball. I mean, even sometimes one team gets their field goal, then the second team is running the hurry up just trying to get their field goal to get a tie just because 10 minutes is barely anything. So anyway, a couple proposals are on the table right now. Both by one by a specific team and one that's being talked about around the league. The first proposal I'll talk about is the team one. The Ravens made a proposal. And if you have kids or if you were a kid with siblings, then this one might make some sense because you can use this with your kids too when they're arguing over a piece of food or something like that. Instead of the split and choose, it's the spot and choose the Ravens have proposed. So how does this work? Instead of doing a coin toss to see who gets the ball, one team now picks a spot on the field, any spot on the field they want to, and says this is where the ball will be placed to start overtime. But then the other team gets to pick whether they want the ball at that spot or whether they want to play defense from that spot. So basically, I could say, okay, the spot's going to be the 18-yard line. Let's say we're the Bucks, we're in overtime. We get to pick. I'm saying the ball's at the Buccaneer 18-yard line, okay? So do you want to be on offense or defense? Do you want to have the ball on your 18-yard line going to try and score, or do you want the other team to be backed up playing defense? But either way, it's on the 18-yard line of the offense. It's the offense or defense's 18-yard line is what you get to say, not either team, because obviously if it was on the Bucs 18-yard line, you'd choose offense and you'd go in the red zone. But no, you get to say, I want the offense on the 30-yard line, offense on the 15-yard line, offense on the 25-yard line, whatever it is. You can say that, and then the other team gets to pick if they want to be offense or defense. I'm intrigued. It brings, first of all, it brings more strategy and less randomness into things. And if you're wondering, the NFL coin toss win percentage, the team that wins the coin toss in NFL overtime, as it stands now, with the current rules, is like 53% for the offense and 47% for the defense. So it's not ridiculously bad. And in fact, people think colleges is more fair because both teams get the ball no matter what. But college, you get to choose if you go first or second. And that's an even bigger advantage. College is more skewed. The team that wins the coin toss wins the game 55% of the time. And the team that wins or loses the coin toss only wins 45% of the time. Never mind that college overtime is also just gimmicky and dumb and not real football because it takes, you know, too many normal football things out of it, like field position and special teams. But it's also not even remotely as fair as you probably think it is. So forget college overtime. I don't want to hear about it. But I like this proposal from the Ravens. And where would the cutoff be? It depends. You know, I'm sure the math guys, the advanced stats guys, could very quickly come up with a break-even point where I think, you know, okay, the 17-yard line or further, you want the ball. But if you're at your own 16 or back, you'd rather be on defense. And obviously, this would depend on your quarterback. It would depend on the weather conditions. It would depend on your kicking game. It would depend on your defense. That's the point. It depends on a lot of things that are already built into the game. It would not depend on the coin toss winner. It depends on real football things. It would depend on your head coach's human nature. Some head coaches are just naturally more conservative or more aggressive. All these things are things that would play into it. And I personally would think it'd be great. I'd love to see this. And again, it takes the randomness out of it. And then you can go ahead and play your sudden death. You don't have to do the both teams because you already had a fair way of both teams having a chance to decide how they want this to go down. Now we put the ball there and we go play sudden death. And that the sudden death part is built into the decision making. So I think it would be fantastic. And what's more, it would make things very simple. The thing I like about sudden death, I don't like the part where the one team can just go score and win and that's it. But the thing I like about sudden death is it's a very easy thing to understand. And you don't change any rules. You just start. You basically start a second game of football, and you play away. And you say next team, next score wins. Those three words are magic words to me. Next score wins. I always love those words. That's one of the reasons I love hockey overtime in the playoffs the most of anything. Instead of the soccer BS shootouts, whatever the hell, all these other different systems. Hey, here's the ball. When it's in one of those end zones or through one of those uprights, we're done. Go ahead, go play. That's it. And same with like World Cup soccer. I know they say, oh, the players would get too tired. Not if you allowed like unlimited substitutions or something in overtime of a soccer game where they only have three during regulation. I'd say, here's the ball, boys. We're not leaving this stadium until this ball I'm holding in my hand is in one of those two nets. Go, play. That's it. I don't care. That way you couldn't, if you're like a lesser team, some of these lesser teams try and grind it out because they know they suck. You know, like Greece will be playing Brazil or something and it's tied. And they'll just be like, hey, if we just play catch back here with the ball for 45 minutes or whatever it is, 90 minutes, maybe we can get this to a shootout and maybe win that because we're not good enough to actually, you know, no, you got to score or you're not going to get out of here. That's how it should be. And the same thing with the NFL. I mean, I like the idea of just playing and that's it. But at least you got to make a decision and at least you're not like gnashing your teeth over this coin toss where, oh my God, you know, what's it going to be? You're either going to get to choose where the ball goes or which side of it you want to be on. And everybody's going to have a chance. So let's see if they do that. It doesn't, even though I think it's a great idea, it doesn't sound like something that 24 out of 32 teams would approve of. It makes a lot of sense and it's fun. But these types of things, when you have to have 75% of people agree on it, you know, it just seems like there's always a few people who are sticks in the mud and who don't see, you know, they don't have the progressive mindset, you know, to do something like this. So I doubt it. The other proposal is more regressive, and this one is being talked about because they want games to be shorter. Why they want games to be shorter, we'll talk about. But the other one is, they're talking about reverting to just sudden death, meaning taking out that field goal clause they have now and going back to the way it was, where it's just sudden death. You kick a field goal, you win. And the reason for that is they want shorter games. As of now, you know, teams are, unless they score a touchdown on the first drive, there's guaranteed to be at least two overtime possessions, and sometimes they stretch into the 10. That's one of the reasons they shorten to 10 minutes, even though I hate that. The reason they did it is because they said safety, but let me tell you what's going on here. All right? The big reason was Thursday night games. They didn't want teams playing Sunday, a big, long overtime game, then going back out there on Thursday night games. And I'm telling you right now, I think they're trying to just get more TV windows on other days. And we saw with the pandemic in this past season what happened when we had to move games around. We had Tuesday football and Wednesday football. And I thought it was great, by the way. They need more standalone windows. You know what the next frontier is? I mean, obviously more TV windows are good just because of more TV windows. But what's the next frontier they're trying to conquer? Is betting. They want people to bet on the games. They're getting more receptive to that. They're going to build it in. They've got sponsors that are gambling sponsors. Now, this isn't just football. I'm talking about all sports in general. Because they know people will bet their asses off on anything that moves, and then they can get a cut of it. But what tampers down betting, right? What do people like to bet on? They like to bet on games they can see. They don't want to bet on some game that's not on TV. But when you have seven games crammed into the 1 o'clock window, and then four more or whatever crammed into the 4 o'clock window, and you've only got actually one game that most people are watching in the 1 o'clock window, they ain't going to bet on as many games. So if you have, here, what do they have now? They got, how many TV windows are there now for the NFL? There's three on Sunday. There's the 1 o'clock, the 4 o'clock, and the Sunday night game. Then there's the Monday night and the Thursday night. But what if you wanted to use, like, for example, doubleheaders on Monday night? There's two spots now instead of one. But that's more teams playing on a short week, which is why they want shorter games. You know, what if you throw in Fridays and Saturdays are off limits? They're not going to do those, at least not until after, you know, college and high school are done. But what if you want to play some Tuesday and Wednesday games? I'm telling you right now, as a fan, not even gambling, just a football fan, I would be elated if there was an NFL football game on Sunday through Thursday. Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. I'll take Friday and Saturday off for high school and college because I like those things too. Then Sunday again. Don't you hate during football season, Tuesday and Wednesdays? It's like, and don't give me Maction. Maction's fun for a few minutes, but Maction doesn't cut it for me. For those of you that are college football fans, that's those MAC games, the Mid-American Conference, that they play on Tuesday and Wednesday, all these random nights. But if you told me right now, we're playing NFL games every night of the week except Friday and Saturday, I mean, my eyes light up. And also, people are watching those games. They're not buried. There's no sense in having eight games or four games or five games on at the same time. I think the NFL, and this is one of the reasons why I suggested going to an 18-week season, even with 16-week games and adding another bye week, because you can get more games on TV that people can see instead of cramming all the games on at the same time. I mean, there shouldn't be six games at 1 o'clock on a Sunday when I only have one of them on my TV. That shouldn't happen. It just shouldn't. So anyway, to make a long story short, the reason I think they want to do this is not anything to do with strategy. It's not anything to do with the competition committee. It's not even anything to do with player safety as far as actually caring about player safety. But it's being able to cite player safety when they then want to turn around and say, hey, more teams are going to be playing on six-day weeks or even five-day weeks if we play Tuesday and Wednesdays. We want to have more games out of our usual time slots. That will start to have more irregular scheduling that we're not used to or we haven't done as much in previous years, and there'll be more short weeks. So, hey, let's not have an overtime game going 10, 15 minutes. Hey, whatever. I'm in favor. No matter what you do, I mean, I think if you do the Ravens proposal, you're still likely to get shorter games because it's, again, still sudden death, only now you're not doing the coin toss being such a huge factor. I think it's the best of both worlds. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a chance these guys at the NFL or these owner, you know, the 32 teams can get on board with this. I really hope they do. I mean, think about the Bucs, you know, just from your own standpoint for the Bucs, this current Bucs team with Brady. What would you do in overtime, and even this defense as well, if the other team gets the pick and they say, okay, the ball's going on the 17-yard line. You go three and out from your own 17 and you're punching, you're going to get, they're going to be set up probably somewhere between the 35 and the 50, their own 35 and the 50. And they're only a couple first downs away from kicking a field goal to beat you. You do not want to go three and out from your own 20 or back. What would you pick? I mean, I really, really want to know. And I really think it'd be a lot of fun to see games like that. And most of all, I think it would reduce ties and keep the rules of overtime simple. You'd have to explain the beginning of overtime to people, like how they start it. But once the game's going on and someone walks into the room and you're watching on TV and you go, hey, it's an overtime, you don't have to explain, okay, well, if they kick a field goal here, it's still going, but if they don't, then it's over. But if they score a touchdown, they win. You don't have to do that. You just say, yeah, next score wins, man. It's overtime. Ooh, look, they're on the 50. What's going to happen? That kind of simplicity is good, I think. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on the rules. One other one is they're talking about making roughing the passer reviewable, which could be both good and bad, honestly. I know people hate the reviews, but I hate really, really chintzy roughing the passer calls that preserve drives after a huge third down stop or something like that. I can't stand that. But there's a flip side to that coin, too, because the reviews would go both ways. They could add roughing the passer if they saw it after the fact when they didn't call it before. And I don't like those types of penalties in general because they don't feel like football penalties, and they feel like they have too big of an outsized impact on the outcomes of games. But anyway, that's another one they're talking about. And, you know, I'm not sure if that one will pass or not. We'll talk more about it next week as we move another week closer to when the real action starts. Still waiting on a salary cap, too, and that's another thing. It's not official what the salary cap will be because of some of the TV contracts that are still getting finalized and those types of things with accounting. Have to get the exact numbers. But somewhere in the, you know, 180-something million range is where it'll be. And once we get that number, especially if it's a little lower than they're thinking, you could see a lot of action around the league with cuts and things and free agents and all that stuff. And we're just getting into that now. So until then... Oh, actually, no, wait, I forgot one other thing. I wanted to say this. This is big news here, folks. So we talked last week or 2 weeks ago on the show about how the Buccaneers, not that we're proud of this, but it also is kind of cool when you contrast it with the fact that we're sitting there holding the Lombardi Trophy over our heads as the reigning Super Bowl champions. The Bucs, and for some time now, not just currently, but have been the losingest overall franchise in all four North American sports, even after going, and you know, they don't play that many games in the NFL, they only play 60 in a year, so it's hard to impact your win-loss, your winning percentage that much, even over a period of years. But the Bucs, after going 11-5 this past year, have a winning percentage of 393, and if you extend it out to the 10,000th column, you've got a winning percentage of .3932, okay? So the Minnesota Timberwolves are the only team that's even been close to the Bucks over the years, but the Bucks have always been the worst winning percentage in all four North American major pro sports. The Timberwolves lost a couple games this week, folks, and the only reason you should care about that, and maybe you don't care about this, but the only reason you should care about that is because those two losses have dropped the Timberwolves' all-time franchise winning percentage now. Keeping in mind the Bucks are 3932, the Timberwolves are now 3929. They are 0.3 of a point behind the Bucks in the winning percentage category, and that means the Bucks, as of right now, and we're going to keep an eye on Timberwolves scores the rest of the year because they could get hot and win like 2 out of 3, and all of a sudden they go back over the line. But as of right now, the worst team in all of North American pro sports is not the Bucks; it's the Minnesota Timberwolves. Who lost, I think they lost on Monday, and then they lost again on Wednesday, and we'll keep an eye. And if they play the Raptors, I have to check and see if they play the Raptors here in Tampa, or if they have yet to do that. I would like to go to that game and cheer against, and not just because the Raptors play in town, but just to cheer against the Timberwolves to keep that percentage lower and keep them behind the Bucks. And they have they are going to let fans to see Lightning games starting on March 13th. 3,800 fans per game. Keep that in mind as well. But that was one other thing I wanted to mention, and we'll keep constantly updating you on the winning percentage status of the Minnesota Timberwolves as events warrant. But right now, the Bucks have them by a few 0.1 of a point. So until next week, I want to thank everybody like I always do. First of all, our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, our sponsor. Thanks to them for always taking care of the free stretch. Thanks to the Joes for allowing me to be on JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere on the internet for Bucks coverage, the single best place anywhere, period, for Bucks coverage. And that gets me in front of you guys, who I know check the site all the time. Thanks to you for listening to the show. Like you always can, email me if you got anything to say or want to add to the show. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address, or follow me at BobbyGameDay. I will be back next week. In the meantime, enjoy the weekend. It's going to be beautiful weather around the Bay Area. If you're here, if you're up north somewhere, sorry about that, but I'm sure it's coming soon. And in the meantime, wherever you are, be safe, have fun. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.